Welcome to this episode of the Social Media Church Podcast. I am here with Jason Morris from Westside Family Church, the online technology pastor. Thanks so much for being on the show this week.
Hey, no problem, Jay. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, so Jason is somebody that's good friends with Niels and I. Niels is out this week, but Jason is one of those guys. You know, we actually just all got together, a bunch of online technology pastors around the country got together and did a meetup in my neck of the woods, and we got some planning together, and Jason was part of that. It was so much fun to kind of like,
yeah, we had a blast.
It was encouraging. We actually did something super special, not to kind of rub it in everybody, but where did we get to go?
I wasn't sure if you were going to say it.
I know. Where did we get to go, Jason?
Well, we got to go. I didn't even know that this place existed, man. The Club 33 at Disneyland. It was just, my kids were so jealous. It wasn't even funny. I felt, you know, I don't know if you, did you take pictures of the food?
I didn't take enough photos, but we had a Facebook group going on, and I'm so glad Jason Kasten had taken a lot of photos, because my wife was asking me like, hey, do you have photos? And I was like, oh man, I forgot. And I'm glad everybody was, you sent that question, right? You sent that question.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because what I did was, you know, I took pictures beforehand, but as the night kept on going, I got this sense of guilt, you know, where I just felt worse and worse about the fact that I'll never be able to get my wife and kids to ever come to this place. And if I show them anything, it's just going to make them feel bad.
Yeah.
And so I ended up not taking any pictures of the food. And then when I described it to Maria, my wife, later on, she wanted to see pictures of the food. And because, you know, she's an artist, and really each plate was a work of art.
Yeah.
You know, more than just the taste, it was the presentation, you know. Yeah. And so when I tried describing it to her, she just kept on asking me, why didn't you take a picture of it? And then I was like, well,
I know. You're enjoying the moment. So it was super cool, because I think encourage this with anybody who's doing similar line of work. Get together, have some strategy, talk about, because I think the beauty was we had six or seven people that were all going through the same things, but we all did it very differently. And, you know, I came out of there very encouraged on some couple items. And I will say just a quick shout out. Thank you for the guys at Plain Joe Studios. They help churches in big ways. And they're the ones that arranged us to go to Club 33. And we had some good conversation, good meal, good experience. So if you want to know what Club 33 is, just Google it. It's something special at Disneyland in Anaheim that Walt Disney put together. 33 people. It's called Club 33 because out of the 33 original investors, it was so much fun. Check out Plain Studios, though. They're a great group. We love them. And so out of that meetup, I kind of had this idea. I was texting you, and we've had a bunch of conversations since then. But one of the big things was this idea of people management, and that on online, we have this unique ability to be able to directly manage people from beginning to end, because we meet them online and we have the ability to get them information. And so we came out of that talking about some creative ways. But I remember very early on that you guys at Westside do something very creative, and you're able to manage people, and you have some automation in that. And I wanted to share with the group, how do you guys do that, and like, what does that look like in your context?
Well, actually, this came out of really even more than the online stuff. It came out of this desire that we feel like Jesus asked us to make disciples. So we felt that we need a disciple making process. And so for all of our on-site campuses, we have a discipleship pathway from even before they show up for the first time at one of our on-site campuses. They can become part of the process, and it takes them all the way to the end of the continuum where they are planting churches or getting involved with a particular combination that we call the intersection of their character and calling, whatever that happens to be, and maximizing that to the most for the kingdom. So at every stage, we have seeker, believer, follower, leader, and we kind of help people take their next step. It's part of our culture where we're constantly talking about people taking their next step. And so for us online, it was an easy analog for us to take those internet marketing tools that already exist, those pipelines and systems that already exist, and match that with the on-site culture of helping people take their next step. And so basically I took the template of the next steps process is what we call it. That's our discipleship process. Yeah. We call it our next steps process, and just translated it into an online context. And so for us, it was, man, it really wasn't that hard, but with the online tools that we have, we can automate that process so that it takes a lot of the work off of the admin staff. And I think that that's probably part of the reason why a lot of churches don't have a discipleship process to begin with, because of the administrative overhead that's required to, you know, just kind of get people from one thing to the next, to have a system at all, and then you got to manage it. And so it's like, you know, forget it. We'll just pray and read the Bible and hope for the best, you know, and sometimes that works, but it really helps people to know, first of all, that they can self-identify and say, okay, well, I'm probably at the leader or maybe the follower category. What's my next step? You know, and then they know what to do. It's kind of similar to what you guys do over at Saddleback with your 101, 201, 301 kind of a system. But we have it set up similar to that, except we have different measurables that aren't necessarily class related. Some are on the beginning side of the spectrum of seeker and believer. They're more event driven, class driven. But as you progress, there are more habits that you're forming in your life and ways that you're developing yourself. So it's less class-driven or experience-driven and more, how do you describe it? It's more environment-driven. Gotcha. Where you're, this is just becoming a part of who you are.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you go in the continuum, it changes. And I think it's a healthy thing too.
And I think that, you know, the beauty of some of the technology, I want to get into how you guys set that up and what software you use, but essentially, you know, the church I grew up in, you know, somebody would come to service and then they would fill out a, you know, first time visitor card, and they would walk out to the patio and hand it to somebody. And that person would hand them like a welcome package that would have, you know, a Bible about the church, and maybe a bag of M&Ms or something, you know?
Right.
And then that first, that card, like somebody on Sunday night or Monday on that connections team would call that person and say, hey, how did your visit go? And can you come back next week? And we have this meetup. And the idea is then that person at the next event would find out about small groups. And then, idea, there's all this personal touch, but essentially you're limiting it to that person, that team, or that person's ability, how quick they can respond. And so with automation, there's a potential. And we were kind of talking about this idea of like how Amazon does this. Like Amazon, I can go on Amazon and I could be like, I could be looking for, I did this a couple of weeks ago. I kept on debating if I was going to buy this like 5-pound bag of Sour Patch candy. Okay. So, terrible. But like I ended up doing it. And so, but I like didn't want to buy it. And then I go over on Facebook, and then Facebook on the side, all of a sudden I'm like searching, there's an ad that's telling me to buy a 5-pound of candy. Now the reason why Amazon can do that, 'cause they have all this data they can gather, but like they're automating that. They're not, there's not somebody in a room in an Amazon fulfillment office, like, oh, we got to target Jay Cranda. They've automated some of that. And so there's something about our church process. Like we, in our context, it goes from weekend to classes to small groups. And then the context of small groups, you're balancing the five purposes, great commandment, great commission. That's what it looks like to be a healthy believer. There's some of those things. So we could automate, you know, when's the last time you've been to church? And maybe if your IP hasn't been pinged in the last 3 weeks, we give you a reminder. Hey, you haven't gotten it. We show your record shows you're not in a small group. You haven't taken. What if we automated that either by an email or by we put it to someone's inbox, like, hey, you need to call this person. And so we talked about that. Now, we are in our context are building some of that internally. You use your church database software, right?
Right. Yeah. We use CCB or Church Community Builder. And the whole reason way back when, we've been using it now for, 6, maybe 7 years now. And back in the day when we were looking at making a change because we needed something that was cloud-based for our volunteer teams instead of something that was locked into our membership pastor's computer that he was sharing, you know, we needed to make a change. We wanted to make it cloud-based. And one of the things that was a big selling point for us was that Church Community Builder, from its very design, is designed to have like a lot of other CRMs or customer relationship manager programs, kind of the pipeline. And what they've done is they've taken that idea of a pipeline, they call it a process queue, and it was based around the process. And for us, you know, our job is disciple making. So if we have a disciple making process, that is way more important than having a database of contact information. Mm. Every other church management system out there is going to have a database. A database wasn't what we were looking for. What we were looking for was a process queue or a way to help people take their next step. And so Church Community Builder was a great way for us to automate that process as well as manage it. And when we started off creating a process queue that would take people that we manually administered from one thing to the next. And, you know, we would have a membership class, or we call it our Get Connected, which is really more than a membership class, but for people who, just to kind of wrap their brains around what we do, that's kind of what it is. We would manually move people from one thing to the other. And we realized that as time went on, that CCB added functionality that allowed us to automate that process, and even automate it to the degree where it sends out an email, and depending upon what they checked or unchecked or selected, it would fork that off into a different series of process queues. So basically, on a form submission, they'd say, I'm interested in a pastor calling me about, you know, a problem I'm having, right? Well, yeah. that would automatically put it in another process queue that our team of pastors to call that person would automatically say, oh, you've got 5 people to call today, Monday morning, right? Mm-hmm. And then if they also selected that they wanted information about our next Get Connected class, well, those two things would indicate this goes into this process queue, and the other one, the Get Connected, goes into the Get Connected process queue. So it's like, okay, the next time this month we have a Get Connected, these are the people who we need to contact for our Get Connected class. And then what ended up happening over time was, we ended up creating this huge, I mean, workflow system. It's, you know, like this, it's pretty sophisticated. We printed it out once, and it was like, you know, 10 pages long, just, you know, all over the place, but it works. What's great about it is, even when people don't respond, that is a signal for us in our automations. So if someone gets an email and then doesn't actually show up to the class, or doesn't show up, or doesn't get called, or doesn't respond to the email in some way, then that actually is another trigger. So we will send up a follow-up email.
I love that.
Phone call. And then we basically, so that our process queue system wouldn't totally get out of hand, we have a 3 strikes and you're out rule. So basically all of those non-responder triggers don't go past 3 times, because we don't want to end up becoming another spam engine.
Yeah.
So if we've asked you about, you said that you wanted to know about our Get Connected class, we've told you about it now for the past 3 months, and you still haven't showed up and you still haven't responded, well, then you'll drop off that queue. And so that's a way for us to, even as a Next Steps team or as a church, we can kind of wash our hands of it, so that we can stand before Jesus someday and say, look,
yeah,
we get 3 chances, you know, yeah, we did our due diligence, you know, because you can't keep on hounding people forever, because then your own administration, you know, overhead that you're doing is just unsustainable.
Yeah.
So just thinking through in the way that you design things kind of helps as well.
Well, and what I love about this is that, you know, we both are on two ends here, that, you know, we have something internal we're building, and you have something that was off the shelf that
right. You
guys have, that's obviously, that's integrated into everything and who you are. So, you know, obviously, and we were actually talking about this when we were getting together with people doing online ministry in a variety of different ways, that, you know, there's no perfect system that can manage because every DNA of your church is going to look different. Like our context is very different from your context, but there's similarities. And the beauty though, with an office shelf, is that you can make it work for you with not a lot of special development. I think that's where people can spend, you know, it's like so many projects get killed because they start developing, it doesn't work. You get to use something off the shelf and build it. Now, I real quick, I wanted to hear just in a couple minutes of, you know, you're in a unique context, Jason, because, you know, you get a lot of time with your senior leader. You know, you're even online. You know, I just watched a couple weeks ago when you're sitting down in a living room, you know, and you were part of the teaching experience, which was awesome. Right.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Which was super cool. And so, like, when you, because you're like the, you're the online pastor, but you're also the technology pastor, like, you, did you sit down with your leader and you said, okay, here's our discipleship process and here's how we can do it in technology? Did you and your senior leader or the team develop that together? Or is that something you proposed and went to them?
Well, let me back up one on to answer that question better. For one, the way that our leadership team works, there really is no one senior leader. So it kind of depends on what particular aspect of ministry needs a little bit of a technological empowerment. And so my role as innovation and technology pastor is to kind of look at the systems, all the different systems of church. And because I'm kind of a techie kind of a person, that when I look at something that could be better, a little bit more efficient, or is broken altogether, and I'm talking about a system, I'm not talking about necessarily technology. Generally, the solution is technological because of the way that I'm wired. Mm. And so what I'll do is I'll look at something that's inefficient and I'll say, you know what, maybe there's a better way to do this. And then I'll propose it, not necessarily to the senior leadership, but to the actual team that's working it out. Because the guys that are in the trenches, one of the nice things about our particular culture is that we have a lot of authority that goes with our responsibility. So if it comes to making a decision on making a change on the way things that are done, the people that are getting it done get to make that kind of decision. So what's nice is that I can go to the people that are feeling the same pain that I'm seeing, and I go to them and say, hey, have you thought of this? Because there's a better way to do it. And most of the time they look at it and say, I didn't know that. This is awesome. Yeah. And then it gets implemented like that. Now, when it relates to things that are a little bit more global or a little bit more high level, that generally is a meeting that I would have with that particular leader of that particular department. Like if we're talking about the next steps process and how we can automate this, I would generally talk with Brian Phipps, our next steps pastor. Wouldn't necessarily, you know, because again, there is no senior leadership. There is, you know, the departmental head. So I would go to them. Now, I will say, because your question was who goes to who?
Yeah.
It used to be when I first started this position that I was going to everybody. Mm. And I would actually go into, we have an annual process where we go through SWOT, you know, strengths, weaknesses, yeah, opportunities, and threats. And the first year that I came into this role, I sat in every single SWOT of every single ministry department. And I got to see where their pain points were to begin with. And I kind of took notes. And that became my roadmap for the next year, where I would dedicate, you know, 1 month to solving this particular pain point or problem that this department was feeling. And then over time, what happened after that first year, the second year, I didn't have to go to them. They came to me. So gotcha. That when they felt pain points, they thought, well, you know, Jason fixed this for us last year. Maybe he's got some ideas that I haven't thought of. And so now what's happening is people are beginning to implement some things and then asking me for consulting, like an internal consulting thing,
yeah,
where they're like, you know what, we're thinking about this particular tool. What do you think? You know? And so to give you an example, we brought on this new missions pastor guy that's also one of our worship leaders. He has kind of has a dual role. And with new people, it's great because they have fresh eyes on stuff.
Yeah.
And so the first thing I do is, you know, I ask them, okay, what do you see is broken? Because I may not even notice at this stage. And so they'll say, well, this is kind of clumsy. And, you know, there's a lot of things where I'm like, huh, never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
And so then that becomes part of my list. But what was nice was, is they also come with many, many times people from the outside, they're coming with their own set of contexts and their own set of familiarity with tools that maybe we're not even familiar with. So he came in and said, hey, there's this tool out there that manages mission trips for folks. And this is what I'd like to use. Can I use it? Like he was asking me for permission. And most of the time that's an interesting scenario because I'm always just saying yes.
Yeah.
But I have a little bit of a broader perspective and I'm trying to think of how this integrates with all the other systems that are running at the same time. So we don't create a data silo that ends up becoming more administratively clumsy to manage down the road.
Yeah.
So I try to coach him through kind of thinking through how it's going to work with accounting, how it's going to work with,
I love that.
You know, all of these other areas of, you know, of church life. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I said, look, you're going to make the decision, because you don't need to ask me for permission. You're going to make the decision, but you need to live with the consequences, knowing what the trade-offs are going to be.
Yeah.
If you create a data silo, you have to manage it.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to feel that pain 2 years down the road. Or, you know, or you're just going to decide, well, we're going to use this other tool that's maybe not the perfect tool that I want to use, but it's integrated.
Yeah.
And so I'm saving myself time, even though there's a little bit of pain that I'll have to adjust to. And so there's trade-offs, and every decision there's trade-offs.
Yeah.
So I try to coach people on what those trade-offs are, kind of getting a global perspective. I don't know if that really answers your question.
No. And I think for this conversation, what's really important, what I want to encourage the person who's listening, no matter if your church is small, large, medium, whatever, is that it's figuring out both internally what's possible and then dreaming in the future. Because you're always complaining about, here's how it is. But are you going to be that person who complains about it? Or are you going to start charting a new, you know, territory? And so
exactly, yes,
it's really easy to say, you know, life sucks right now and we're never going to get anything done. But the leader doesn't just sit there in the quicksand and just, you know, sinks. The leader starts figuring out, okay, is there anything scramble? And maybe it's not, you know, especially in a church context, it's really hard to move the ship in the matter of a couple weeks, let alone a couple days. It might take months. It might even take years. And so obviously you're at a place now, and you were saying how now you have a little bit more, you have way more, you know, ability to shift. But that wasn't immediately, you know, you're getting used to the culture, and now you can learn that and help new guys. And so I think on the people management thing, what I want to encourage churches is that there's both ways with the software that the church community building software that Westside Family Church uses, and then also what we're using here at Saddleback, there's ways that you can automate some of your connection things that happen every week online. And so I want to just thank Jason for being on the show. We're going to put links to everything Jason was talking about, and I want to encourage you to check out Westside Family Church. Their online experience is top of the line. Jason knows what he's doing. Their church knows what they're doing. And if you have a software, if any of our listeners have some ways that you track people and move them along, please encourage. We know some people have creatively used like things like Salesforce and things like HubSpot. There's tons of even secular kind of profit things that people use. And so if you're using something at your church, you got a great example, please engage us, send us in either a contact on socialmedia.church or use the hashtag SMC podcast. Thanks again, Jason, for being on the show. And you've been standing this whole time, so I'm going to let you. So you're going to keep on, and we're going to put the video up. But you have a standing workstation, which I love.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, I've been doing this for years now, and I would have it no other way.
you're awesome. So, anyways, thanks again, and go to socialmedia.church and use the SMC podcast. And thanks for listening.